You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right to 133, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. By the way, tomorrow, you know, people had asked in the past, somebody asked earlier this week, they said, it wasn't yesterday supposed to be asked the sheriff? Well, this week, they moved it, so asked the sheriff with Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch, is this coming Tuesday? But tomorrow, retiring Baldwin County Sheriff and soon to be head of the Alabama Sheriff's Association, Hoss Mack is going to join us here. So it'll be a chance to ask the sheriff as he's on his way out in Baldwin County. That's tomorrow starting at noon. Can we cue the music? If we're going to introduce this, can we? Okay. All right. Get the music going here. Because it is, at least on the TV and everywhere else, it's Shark Week. And we're joined by Angela and Stephen Stokes, Endowed Professor in Environmental Resiliency and Director of the Stokes School of Marine Sciences at the University of South Alabama, Senior Marine Sciences at the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Ladies and gentlemen, the crowd goes wild for Dr. Sean Powers.
Thank you, Sean. I didn't realize that the theme music would come out.
Well, I mean, it's Shark Week, man, right?
You planned.
Yeah. I don't know how many years it is now for Discovery. It's got to be pushing 2 decades of Shark Week. They just printing money. And it shows that, you know, I go through this stuff a lot when people say, well, there's been a shark bite. You came in last time, you know, shark bite. And I said, let's look at the same time how many people, unfortunately, were killed or injured in car wrecks heading down to the beach from Chattanooga or where, you know, Atlanta or whatever. And it just doesn't hold the attention that sharks do.
Now, my favorite statistics that my shark buddies like to give is you have a higher chance of being bitten on the New York subway than by a shark. Apparently, bitings on the New York subway are quite a thing.
We need to go back to long lining on the New York subway. But obviously, I mean, you could look at it scientifically. You do. I look at it anecdotally. There's more sharks around. I mean, fishing experience, there's just more sharks around.
And there's no doubt, and we've talked about this before, a lot of it has to do with the protections and the federal management of shark species, and they are purposefully rebuilding shark populations. And I stress rebuilding because we know sharks, folks you and I's age, in an ocean where sharks weren't that abundant. And they weren't that abundant because of long-line fishing and a variety of things, of exploitations. Now, you know, it takes sharks a long time to reproduce, most species of sharks.
The big ones you've told us over the past, it takes, they got to get...
A great white has to be about at least 15 years old, probably 20, 25
years old.
Before
it's viable.
Before it starts to reproduce.
And then there's some other sharks that aren't as...
Sure, the smaller coastal species rebuild more rapidly, but even a bull shark takes a while. So there's going to be a lag, and that's, you know, we'll see several generations.
So we're not seeing what you think is the peak of this yet for shark numbers with the rebuilding.
No, that I don't know. If the management restrictions stay in for certain species, now certain species we believe are healthy enough, like a sandbar shark is what your fishermen will encounter mostly offshore that's responsible for the bites. Those are still protected. We think the protections can be lifted on those. But then there's some species like dusky and silky sharks that are further offshore that still have some rebuilding to do to be at the populations. But my colleague Marcus Dryman and I just published a paper, and it really was Marcus's idea to look in the Hemingway archives in the Bahamas. So Hemingway was an avid fisherman. And if you look at his work in the 50s, he was very much into reel development and better tackle. And that was because he wanted to be the first in the Bahamas to land in an intact bluefin tuna or an intact blue marlin, because by the time they fought them, the sharks would just eat them up so much. So there's this reference in the Hemingway to Hemingway's talking about how difficult it was getting an intact shark or bluefin tuna, and he says, even with the Tommy gun, we couldn't keep the sharks away.
Wow.
So, obviously, I am not advocating shooting sharks. That is illegal.
Right.
You do not want to do that. But it shows you Hemingway fishing a relatively pristine ocean.
1950s, around Cuba.
Yeah, had to deal with incredible shark populations. Think about in the 80s and 90s when you and I started fishing. Sharks just... bite-offs weren't that big of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, once in a while.
And so now we're swinging back to the point where sharks are more and more. And we'll see, you know, for each species, hopefully the federal government starts reducing the regulations and the protections as those shark populations rebuild. But many people are surprised that, you know, we are purposefully rebuilding shark populations because a healthy ocean has apex predators. And that's not to lessen the negative encounters with shark bites or fatalities, which are still fairly rare. I know that doesn't help the victims, but it is still fairly rare. But we're seeing more and more, especially from a fisherman's point of view, what a healthy ocean with sharks that are abundant looks like. And it's inconvenient, to put it mildly, but, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is rebuild that system to where it, close to where it was in its relatively unexploited state.
Yeah, it is a break, I think, between kind of a pastoral understanding of the outdoors and a full natural one. You see it on land, right? Reintroduction of apex predators, wolves, we'll say out west, right? And what they did to elk populations. Mm-hmm. And I'm a guy that likes to, draw a tag if I'm lucky and head out west. They really have limited the population in some places, which is probably closer to what they would have normally been. But it sure was nice to have a pastoral situation where the apex predators weren't there, more elk for the hunters. But it's, you know, but if you're going to restore an ecosystem, the wolves were there.
And sharks.
I'd hate to run cattle out there.
Sharks have a role. They eat things like stingrays. They eat smaller sharks. So they regulate their own population, and you know, I don't want to go to a beach where there's an abundance of stingrays either, because they also feed on things like oysters, clams, scallops that we like. So there is a balance, and there is a reason for it, there's a reason we need apex predators in any system. But you're right. I mean, the fascination people have with Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, now Nat Geo has... Shark Fest is their version.
Sharkathon.
And so they're competing. Shark Fest is the last week of June. Shark Week is Discovery Channel. Discovery Channel was the first to establish that. But there's some really cool episodes coming up. I've seen it. I've done one of the episodes when sharks attack, and again, my colleague Marcus Tryman and I. Marcus, I'm envious of.
I mean, Sharkus.
Sharkus. Marcus, I'm envious of, because he got to do a Nat Geo special with Anthony McKay, the Falcon in the Marvel movies.
Okay, I've seen none of them. So
anyway, he's from New Orleans, and they were tagging sharks at the Wrigley's for a recent National Geographic. So it is nice that people always have a fascination. I mean, obviously, a lot of people have a fear of them, but even that fear drives them to watch the shows.
Yes.
So it's a great exposure for, we have numerous young students now that have been inspired for careers in marine and coastal and environmental sciences because they grew up with Shark Week. For us, it was Jacques Cousteau.
Yes, it was.
For them, it seems to be more Shark Week.
I used to ask, I didn't know that it was an option to do cool stuff like you, because I would watch Jacques Cousteau and ask mom and dad, like, can I do that? Can I just get a calypso and go around, you know? They said, no, that's not possible. I'm like, well, okay, he's doing it. It's not for you, Sean. And by the way, too, the fascination with sharks also gave rise to Sharknado, which is available on Netflix right now, if you've not seen it. Species-wise, you're talking about sandbar, but let's talk about, give me your top five that we're encountering. We're going to fish 40 miles an end, right? So let's go out to end. We're fishing 140 40 feet of water and in snapper fishing, bottom fishing. What, like when y'all put those ROVs down, I know you see all kinds, but what do you see more than anything else?
So inshore, where your speckled trout fishermen will intercept them, they're going to be the small ones, the spinners, the fine tooth. The Atlantic sharp nose is probably our most common. These sharks won't get bigger than 4 feet. Bonnet heads is another one. It kind of looks like a miniature hammerhead. As you get a little further offshore, then you'll start getting the black tips, will be a very abundant one. As you go offshore, you'll start seeing tiger sharks, and then you'll see a lot of sandbar sharks. But throughout that, you'll see bull sharks from your speckled trout fishermen all the way to, you know, your snapper fishermen. Bull sharks will be there. Bull sharks are kind of specialized for habitats like Mobile Bay.
Yeah, you know, people have been pushing, you know, and I was aware we caught them growing up, rarely, but there's more with social media and everything. It's the, hey, look, I caught a bull shark on Gravine Island, you know, stuff. Yep. I mean, that's very, they're way north of there, I would imagine.
Yep. And as you go even further offshore, that's when you start to get into the duskies, the silkies, the hammerheads. And obviously now we know occasionally you'll see a great white.
But you said this time of year, you were telling us this, nature's nature and does its own thing. But the prevalence or the conditions for a great white are better in the colder parts of the year.
Absolutely.
So they don't like the hot.
They don't like the hot, so they'll be in the deeper water or they'll only come up in the colder periods of time. Come about August, September, when it really gets warm, the only sharks you'll see around are bull sharks and black tips for the most part, and they'll even be reduced in abundance. So that's kind of the natural progression, but it's an incredibly rich fauna for species for sharks in the Gulf of Mexico. So the Gulf is a major system. It's very important for it, and sharks play a critical role in it.
Now, so with that being said, is there a right amount? You know, do they self, you talking about you would like to see the regulations pull back from the feds on some of these species? You know, I didn't even get a chance to say, do they self-regulate? Is there the right number of sharks? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, okay, this is the goal. This is where it's correct. Or is it?
It's hard for us just because we also don't have scientifically rigorous data that goes back that far. One of our big windows into that is the deep sea fishing rodeo. We know in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, they were landing consistently much bigger sharks than even we're landing now. You know, it wasn't unusual for them to catch 800-900-pound sharks. So now, and those were mainly tiger sharks that were the big ones. Now we're starting to see that weight of the sharks come back. So that's an indication. But again, we don't have a whole lot of data to go back to and say what a healthy, relatively unexploited ecosystem had as far as sharks go. And I should say that we're still in the situation where more sharks need conservation than don't need it. Sandbars are just an example of one that I believe has rebuilt. We've been doing surveys from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab Shark Survey since 2005, a survey that Dr. Dryman and I started. So, and that still persists. So at least we have
the benchmark.
20 years of sharks.
All right, coming back with Dr. Sean Powers right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Wednesday style. Get back to our shark talk with Dr. Sean Powers first. Doctor of Precious Metals, Ron, at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. What about it, Ron?
How you doing, sir? Gold and silver doing well. They're up today, not through the roof, but they are up. A lot of large institutions have been making purchases, and we've been selling a lot of gold here at the shop today.
Okay. So, and you look at this, you've talked about this growth in gold and silver as being healthy. Can you remind people what that means? Why is it healthy?
It's healthy because it's not going fast. Anything runs up fast usually comes down just as fast. And when things tend to go up slow and at a moderate pace, they tend to come down the same way. So that's a healthy. You don't want any investment to shoot up real quick and shoot right back down. I mean, most people are going long term. There are day traders out there, but I would never advocate anybody do that. I'm into the longer term, I mean, for retirement type planning. And that's when that you want to see healthy growth and not fast, because fast is scary. Things that go up fast usually turn around just as fast.
That sounds like a measured conservative approach. I like that.
Yeah, conservative.
It's a good thing. Rod, people want to come out and talk precious metals with you or check out all the selection of jewelry, other gift items. How do they find you?
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can give us a call at the shop, 251-725-1590, or visit us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Continue our conversation with Dr. Sean Powers. And, next week, of course, this weekend, you got the kids, the Utes, yep. The Utes fishing in the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. You extremely hard judge on them?
No, we tried to be pretty
pretty easy. I had told this story years ago. I had one of my nephews weigh it. He didn't want to kill the croaker, so we had it in a Ziploc bag. Up to the weigh station Ziploc bag, and it was like, okay, all right, kid, you're on the board.
Exactly.
We'll talk more about rodeo next week, of course, but you have said in the past too, if what that means, you're talking about you just referenced the weights of fish from the rodeo decades and decades ago, but now the information that comes in every rodeo, not only important obviously to USA Marine Sciences stuff and on the Sea Lab, there's people from all over come to get the data from here, not just for sharks, for all kind of fish.
No, it's always a interesting thing. We probably will have 8 different universities and institutions represented, and balancing all the science needs is getting complicated, because so-and-so wants the otoliths from this species, while this person wants the stomachs, while this one wants the swab, and they all are almost competing with each other. So my lab manager, Crystal Hightower, does an awesome job balancing all of those things, and I just intervene, believe it or not, when scientists are fighting over pieces and parts of a different fish.
So. Well, it's good because y'all are excited to see us coming in, you know.
Yep. And we do have the shark category, so we have bull and tiger being the two sharks that we're looking at. We removed hammerhead last year because there is some evidence that hammerheads globally may be on the decline. We think the Gulf population is probably okay, but just to be cautious, we removed it. We believe and know bull and tiger sharks are very healthy. That's not to say we don't have people who a small group, mainly online and from out of the South, that object to us harvesting those sharks. I mean,
I picked a fight on Instagram about that last year.
Yeah,
with a pretty famous person.
And to be honest, and it was you know, all we can do is advise the rodeo on the conservation status. The populations are healthy, so they can be harvested. We're, as scientists, going to take advantage of that opportunity to even gain more. Now, there's a small group that believe that sharks are charismatic enough or to not want to harvest at all.
There's a whole silly world of that. We don't have time, but it's the charismatic megafauna thing that people say, well, we couldn't possibly kill that animal. And like, but you could kill this other animal? Like, why one is more, you know?
I guess my response is a little different because I am a fishery scientist. My point is to provide guidance and advice and the science necessary to sustainably harvest species. And I think you can do that without harming the ecosystem if you get the science and the management right. Now, if you don't want to harvest a certain species because you believe it's charismatic, that's a value-based decision, and that's a political decision.
But that's not science.
That's not science. Now, if you can go convince congressmen and senators and your local representatives that they should share your values, that's fine, but that's not a science-based
right.
decision. That's not my decision to advise someone on. So,
got a couple of science questions here before we wrap. Buddy's asking, how common are cirro mackerel in our area?
Not very. We do see them. And it's not if you brought it into the most unusual category, it probably wouldn't win
okay.
in any given year, but it's not exceptionally common.
Okay. And You know, I don't know that I've ever caught, I mean, and I have my book. I have my book in the office and at home. How different does that Ciro look than a King or a Spanish?
I can tell the difference.
Dr. Power.
That wouldn't be one I would have had to send a picture to Dr. Bob over. I guess is my own thing.
Because people mess up. I mean, to me, just I learned early on about lateral lines and stuff, but people mess up Kings and Spanish, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, no.
That's probably one of the most common ID problems. And most anglers really appreciate it. We'll spend some time with them and show them the difference. But the most unusual categories that we talk about, God, we love it when the fishermen bring those in. I mean, that makes our day, especially if you see us having to take out the ID books and things like that.
Yeah, that's
especially
good.
Especially now that we don't have Dr. Bob to quickly send a pitch or two, because he was just phenomenal. I mean, one of the things that I forget what it was. It was some type of pomfret, which is a big ocean fish, big black fish for the first part, and Bob said it was so-and-so species of pomfret. And I was like, well, how unusual is that? He goes, well, it's the first one I've ever seen. I was like, you know what it was? If it's the first one, he just was an incredible, what we call fish systematist. He just, could figure out things quickly. So if you bring in a most unusual, be patient, because if we're looking up in the ID
books, that's a good sign for them,
yeah.
That's a good thing for you. Okay, I can't wait to see what it's going to be for this year. And, this would be fast. Scott says, how far up the rivers do bull sharks go?
So the record, I think, is St. Louis in the Mississippi River.
That's
so,
getting up there.
Yeah, since we have some locks and dams in Alabama, they eventually they hit a physical barrier before they hit their physiology barrier.
Okay, but they could go further, but we blocked them.
Mm-hmm.
Although they had that damage on Coffeyville Dam. I don't know whatever happened with that, if they fixed it. But I'll address that tomorrow. Dr. Powers?
I think we'll talk next week about the rodeo.
We're talking rodeo next week coming in. And any other holdover shark questions, we can get those tackled next week.
Absolutely.
Dun, 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 dun. Thanks for being here. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.